The fluorescent hum of the 17th floor usually felt like a sanctuary, a sterilized vacuum where the rest of the world stopped existing, but tonight it sounded like a countdown. Mark was in the corner office, the glass walls stripping away any illusion of privacy he claimed to value, his silhouette leaning over a set of blueprints that he'd already approved 3 hours ago. He stayed because I stayed. That was the unspoken rhythm of us. A synchronicity born in the dark of late-night deadlines and the shared adrenaline of a closing escrow. He didn't look up when I walked in, but I saw the way his shoulders dropped, a physical surrender to my presence that he never showed the board of directors. I placed the final signature folder on his mahogany desk, my fingers lingering near his, the air between us heavy with the scent of his expensive peppery cologne and the stale recycled oxygen of a building that had long since gone into sleep mode. He finally looked at me, his eyes tired but sharp, tracking the movement of my throat as I swallowed. He reached out, his thumb grazing the inside of my wrist where my pulse was jumping like a trapped bird. And he whispered that it was almost over, that the papers were being processed, that the complicated part of his life was finally dissolving into the rearview mirror. I believed him, because I needed to believe that the last 6 months of hiding in plain sight, of ducking into stairwells for a frantic kiss, and of deleting every text message within seconds of reading it, wasn't just a cheap cliche. I wasn't the other woman in my head. I was the transition, the lighthouse guiding him out of a wrecked marriage and into the clear water of a life with me. He stood up, the chair scraping against the hardwood with a screech that made me flinch, and he told me he needed a drink, suggesting we head to that dark, wood-paneled bar 3 blocks away where the lighting was low enough to blur identities. He headed toward the private executive washroom to freshen up, leaving his keys and his phone on the desk, a gesture of trust that felt like a gift. But then he stopped, turned back, and asked if I could find his gold fountain pen in the top right drawer so he could sign the final memo before we left. He smiled, that devastating, lopsided grin that made me forget I was a 34-year-old woman with a mortgage and a reputation to protect. And then he disappeared behind the frosted glass door. I opened the drawer, the heavy wood sliding on its tracks with a smooth, expensive click. The pen was right there, nestled in a velvet-lined tray. But as I reached for it, my sleeve caught on a small leather-bound ledger. I moved the book to steady it, and that's when I saw the box. It wasn't hidden in the back or buried under files. It was sitting in a custom-carved recession in the wood, a small navy blue velvet square that looked brand new. My heart didn't just race. It turned into a cold stone in my chest. I knew that box. I knew the brand. I opened it with a hand that felt like it belonged to someone else, a stranger watching a horror movie. Inside, resting on a bed of white silk, was a wedding band. It wasn't his old one, the one he claimed he'd thrown into the Sound the night she moved out. This was a woman's ring, a delicate pavé-set diamond circle that caught the overhead LED lights and shattered them into a thousand mocking needles of fire. It was polished to a mirror finish. There wasn't a speck of dust on it. It looked like it had been cleaned and prepped an hour ago. Beside the box was a small handwritten receipt from a jeweler, dated 3 days ago. The service performed wasn't a resize or a repair. It was a professional cleaning and engraving update. I picked up the ring, my vision blurring at the edges, and turned it toward the light. Inside the band, the inscription didn't have his wife's name or a date from a decade ago. It had a date from next month. And then, the initials. Not mine. Hers. The sound of the water stopping in the washroom felt like a gunshot. I realized in that split second that the narrative I'd been fed, the tragedy of the lonely executive, the cold house, the wife who didn't understand his ambition, was a carefully constructed architectural marvel designed to house my own delusions. He hadn't been distancing himself from her. He had been perfecting the optics. I wasn't the escape hatch. I was the secret engine that kept him running at peak performance while he maintained the facade of the perfect, committed husband at home. The separation was a ghost story he told to keep me compliant, to keep me working 80 hours a week and keeping his secrets, because I thought I was protecting our future. I looked at the ring again, realizing it was the ultimate tool of control. He kept it here, in the office, in his desk, like a trophy or a backup plan. Maybe he intended to give it back to her on their anniversary next month as a renewal. Or maybe he just liked the power of having his life perfectly compartmentalized. One woman in the penthouse and one woman in the office, neither of us ever knowing the full floor plan of his heart. I heard the door handle turn. I shoved the box back into its hole, slammed the drawer shut, and grabbed the fountain pen just as he walked out, buttoning his cuffs and looking every inch the man who had it all under control. He walked over to me, noticing the way I was leaning against the desk, and he asked if I was okay, his voice dripping with that manufactured concern that I now recognized as a calculation. I handed him the pen, my fingers cold as ice, and told him I was just tired, that the project was taking a toll. He laughed, a soft, predatory sound, and told me that once the legalities were handled, we'd take a week in the Caribbean, just the two of us, no phones, no work, no lies. He put his arm around my waist, pulling me into his side, and for the first time, the contact made my skin crawl. I could feel the weight of the desk behind me, the weight of that ring sitting in the dark, waiting for its moment to be slid back onto a finger that wasn't mine. He led me toward the elevator, talking about the merger, about the stock options, about the bright, shiny world we were going to build together. And I realized I was trapped in a glass cage of my own making. If I confronted him now, I was the hysterical mistress who went snooping. If I stayed silent, I was the silent partner in my own betrayal. I looked at our reflection in the polished chrome of the elevator doors, the handsome director and his loyal assistant, the perfect corporate pair. He squeezed my hand, his grip firm and proprietary, and I felt the invisible tether tighten. He didn't want a new life. He wanted this life, exactly as it was, a world where he could have the stability of a marriage and the thrill of a conquest, all while making me feel like I was the one in charge of the secret. We stepped out into the cool night air, the city lights reflecting in his eyes like a predator's, and he hailed a cab, whispering that tonight was going to be special. I got into the car, the leather smelling of old smoke and desperation. And as he closed the door, locking us in the cramped moving space, I looked at his hands. They were clean, manicured, and empty. He wasn't wearing a ring, but I could still see the faint pale line on his finger where one used to sit, a permanent mark of a contract he never had any intention of breaking. I leaned my head back against the seat and closed my eyes, the realization washing over me that the complicated part wasn't the separation he'd promised. The complicated part was wondering how many other women had sat in this exact seat, listening to the exact same story, while that ring sat in the desk upstairs waiting for the next one to find it.